Chapter 2. Knock, knock. Who's there? Nobody. Nobody who? By Paul Pera. October is the cruelest month. My father said, "Cookie, you're going to have to grow up quicker now." I still held on to denial and refused the grim forecasts, especially coming from my father. Shortly and slowly, the illusion of stability grew into uncertainty. I preferred to be invisible, though in a small neighborhood, tragedy creates unwanted celebrity. No accommodations were available for sudden shifts in fate. "Pick up the pieces and move on. It's water under the bridge. Yesterday's news. Get back to the mine or you'll lose your place." There was distrust indulging in too much sorrow. I found not walking in my own skin felt familiar, and the concussion of death gave me some needed numbness. My grandmother and mother died 1 month apart. Their probate attorney wrote an impassioned letter to my geometry teacher, Brother Joseph, to cut me some slack. No avail. Brother Joseph was incapable of feeling a student's battlefield grief, and he flunked me. Boarding school. Father Larry, my grammar school confessor and friend, realized there was a drift. He encouraged me to leave Sacred Heart and facilitated admission into a Salesian boarding school in Watsonville. My grades improved, and I made up for the failed first semester. During Easter break, we were obliged to leave. I did not have anywhere to go, and a classmate with burglary experience and an old carer drove me to my family's North Beach flat. He climbed a ledge and broke into the vacated house. Cool! It felt like returning to a bombed-out village. The only living thing were tropical fish in the bright green stagnant aquarium. Miraculously, they survived months of neglect. To rescue these survivors, I jumped the fence separating our deck from my Chinese neighbors, who graciously received my pets. Saving these fish was a fitting atonement for parents I could not rescue from themselves. Returning home. I returned to San Francisco from boarding school, and I arrived in time for my father's eloping to Las Vegas with my future stepmother. It was impossible for him, at age 46, to be without a woman in his life. Brother Gilbert, my high school teacher and mentor, called Catholic Social Services, who enrolled me into the San Francisco Working Boys Club, an affiliated group home. It was a beautiful, multi-storied, walnut-paneled mansion across from the iconic Alamo Square. It was run by the Archdiocese as a group home for high school-age young men who came from foster homes, failed adoptions, or juvenile hall. Many of them grew up in the concrete eyesores designed for the poor called the Projects. I showed up with a suitcase and $200. From this point forward, I would not live home again. The decision and calling. A choice for an 18-year-old in 1961 after high school was work, college, the military, or marriage. Vietnam was the looming domino that was falling in Southeast Asia. This war was becoming a career path for young men lining up at the local draft boards. I already had a cousin who was a Dominican nun. Father Larry Byrne and the Salesian nuns wanted me to be a first-round draft choice for the priesthood straight out of Laura School. I disappointed them and waited. With four other graduates from Sacred Heart, I enlisted on a mission of the young, the fervent, the devout, to join the black-robed few. Making the decision, getting accepted, was a relief, since I had vacillated 4 years earlier. A vocational calling is difficult to determine with certainty. At best, it was a faint, intuitive whisper. Desire, attraction, and the romantic notion of performing extraordinary works of kindness and generosity were the dream. We would choose a life of a celibate life, which from our perspective was easy, since we were already virgins. We would share possessions communally and obey whoever holds the mantle of authority. We were going to marry our altruism, the noviciate. Mount LaSalle was a Spanish-style chapel situated on a prominent hill overlooking the Napa Valley, with its orderly rows of wine grapes below. Picturesque, exactly what wine-tasting tourists expect in wine country. We had a beginning group of nearly 40 postulants. Most were recent high school grads from other Christian Brothers schools in California. Mount LaSalle was a formal cloister, zoned private to the outside world in the tradition of monasticism. No TV, radio, music, newspapers, or magazines. Free from distraction and temptation. We were assigned an experienced novice who became our guardian angel guide. It would take months to learn prayers in three languages, protocols, rituals, orientation to the vast grounds, and religious name. This process would weed out all but the most determined. A hellishly loud handbell broke the silent rest at 5 a.m. in the morning, with the director yelling, "Live Jesus in our hearts!" A sleepy, shell-shocked arousal replied, "Forever!" We quickly dressed, brushed our teeth, threw water in our face, and filed to the first floor past the arches, carefully ducking the squadrons of bats. A draft of heated, dry air welcomed us to the enormous high-ceiling chapel. It was an ornate, gold-painted Rococo altar and tabernacle that faced us, where we genuflected and began morning prayers, filling the first 10 rows, choir left and choir right. The director, Brother Pius, sub-director Joachim, and Brother Dorian, a tailor and etiquette teacher, were behind us. Behind them, the high school, followed by retired brothers known as ancients. After a 30-minute meditation, Mass was celebrated by Father Lindsay. Then breakfast, morning chores, New Testament study, followed by study of St. Thomas Aquinas. At 11 a.m., back to the chapel, chanting or reciting the canonical hours from missals we carried from study hall. After lunch, we walked in small groups for a half an hour. The acreage had tree-lined, tree-covered grounds I seldom tired of. The vistas of surrounding mountains kept us ensconced in the quietude and changing faces of nature. We were assigned projects in the afternoon for an hour and a half of manual labor. I got to choose areas of neglected maintenance that I cherished, and it served an early passion in landscaping and design. After work detail, there was physical recreation and organized sports: baseball, touch football, calisthenics, basketball. The area afforded rich, vigorous hiking over numerous trails. I never felt bored or missed being in the world as we were sequestered from public view. During dinner and supper, we took turns reading from a lectern. We walked after dinner, followed by art class or craft projects. Brother James, a high school teacher, taught us and led us in Gregorian chants in preparation for the changeable Latin text for the Sunday Mass. We sang in a choir loft accompanied with a pipe organ played by Brother Columban, an accomplished organist. A classic bell tower, which reminds me of a scene in Vertigo, was the location of rope pulling from three stories below, though no James Stewart, by different novices getting roped. After 6 months of training, a new name had to be picked since we would relinquish our own. This was symbolic of dropping the identity of being in this world. We would use only the first name and kept the second to separate one from another brother in the province. The names I liked were Jude of the Cross, Tyler Zachary, Simon Dominic. Some had the ring of a star's stage name. I chose Brother Pius of David. The director's name was Brother Erpasian Pius, and he was a charismatic man who most wanted to emulate. I yearned for his approval and attention. He jokingly tried to discourage me from taking his name. Vestments were part of the theater craft of spiritual transformation, and I loved the robe and the collar. I was no longer a civilian. I was known as Brother Pius David, FSC. When we began 6 months earlier, we started with nearly 40 applicants. After robing, we had 12. As of 2012, one brother was still active. Particular friendships. 40 young men in their late teens or early 20s were vying for the director's guidance, support, and encouragement. I was used to special supportive relationships with cleric mentors in grammar school and at the Working Boys Club. Yet, seldom did I feel a particular warmth or attachment coming from Brother U. Pius. He had favorites, and they spent more time than most in his glass-paneled office. The director had needs, and he satisfied his emotional needs with a pet novice. He did encourage brothers to foster particular friendships, a very noticeable partnership one would have with a peer. When brothers broke off for lunch or evening walks, the PFs met for solitary chats. Few, if any of us, had had high school girlfriends. Brother Pius was suggesting something unknown, bordering on the homoerotic, a major taboo. In retrospect, I believe he had the human ache of unconsummated love. If homosexuality existed, it was sinful to conjecture, as it was sinful to practice. A chapter ends and begins. The chapter panel decided who would take first vows. When Brother Pius came into my room, I had had the flu. He angrily asked, "Why is the window closed?" He sat down next to the bed and said abruptly, "You didn't pass chapter." It was a coup de grace. "Tell Brother Gilbert not to be mad at me." "Okay," I said. It was like hearing, "Your mother's dead. She's not coming back." "Creative people don't do well in the Christian Brothers," he said. I immediately thought of Brother Jude, an artist friend at St. Mary's. He was creative. Was this an excuse for something else he's not telling me about? "Be obedient," I thought. "This is God's will." I asked to stay till I recouped from the flu. "Yes, but don't tell the other brothers. This may upset them." The next few days was helpful. It softened the concussion. When people left Mount LaSalle, there were no fanfare. There were no goodbyes. A friend, Brother Sean, drove me back to San Francisco. We stopped in Sausalito and had a hamburger and two beers at Zach's on the waterfront. We laughed and joked, and I got a buzz. This was our Irish wake. Brother Sean was my best friend at Mount LaSalle, and he had an irreverent sense of humor, a flair for the absurd. I returned to the Working Boys Club to begin a new chapter after 1.5 years away at Mount LaSalle. Denouement. I reviewed the year and a half since I arrived at Mount LaSalle. I had change. Any mission to help brothers would be accomplished outside of religious orders. There were secular monks, after all. The Christian Brothers changed along with the Catholic Church during the 60s. The prayers and language of prayer became English. The altar faced the congregation. The religious habit and religious names were dropped. In a short time, the world felt like a different universe. One day, while standing at an intersection with the sign flashing "Wait," I had an awakening. By the time it flashed "Walk," it occurred to me the world was not so odious, profane, or threatening. I had exultant pride at completing this rigorous boot camp. The occasional contemplative ecstasy during prayer meditation or mass made the training most rewarding. I had exceeded expectations. My future was opaque, though most experiences would be fresh and sensual in aspect. My curiosity was boundless. In the next 10 years, the brothers would lose many of their best and brightest. In the next 20 years, vocations would cease coming to Mount LaSalle. This beautiful way of life would not be occupied with subsequent generations seeking solitude and a monastic commitment. Most of the teachers in Christian Brothers schools and colleges would be secular staff. The winery business was sold to a large conglomerate. A Way of Life did not pass his own chapter. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you a survivor. And as E.E. Cummings said, there's a hell of a universe next door. Let's go.